Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I'm Anthony Irwin. I'm joined by Pete Zayas. Pete, we usually do this after games, and seeing as the Lakers actually won one, there isn't a second contender for funniest game, funniest thing that happened last night than Lance Stephenson's behind-the-back pass, right?
I don't think Luke Walton found it that funny. Did he play again after that? I'll have to check if he got back in.
He was on the court immediately after it, but I don't know if he got back to it.
But Luke, if you watch, it was funny. Like, where I was sitting was kind of – and I turned to the guy next to me, who was a scout. I was like, did he just try a behind-the-back alley-oop?
Yeah.
And Luke, like, followed him down court, and it was, I'm sure, if it would have been on air, you would have had to bleep most of it. Which was good to see from Luke. I like seeing, like, Luke – you know, taking a stand on plays like that and, you know, be like, nah, man. And Lance has been very good overall, right? But just like, it was a game, especially at that point, where they were putting it on Dallas, and you want to take that from 18 to 30, right?
Yeah.
And just like a simple dump off pass to LeBron, it's a dunk, Staples goes wild, Dallas probably calls a timeout, and then it turns into, you know, a turnover, a live ball turnover, and I think they got a bucket on the other end. Yep. And, you know, that was a game where, with how it ended, too, it would have been nice to put them away when they should have. Yeah, and should have.
Yeah, I completely agree. And the point about Luke and Lance is really important here, because as that was happening, like, let's say Lonzo makes that mistake. Let's say Kuzma or Ingram make that mistake.
Now, the young guy.
They aren't the kinds of players who would do something that dumb.
Sure.
But let's say they do that. They find the bench immediately.
Yeah.
They get pulled in a public fashion. And I thought it was really important that Luke said, like, no, that's not going to stand from anybody.
Right.
So I thought that was good. The other development that I liked last night, from last night specifically, and basically today, we're going to talk about the starters. We're going to talk about Josh Hart and the rotation. And I have a question for Pete about the rotation and putting that together. We're going to talk about the late game struggles. And then if we have time, we'll talk about Lonzo Ball specifically. You guys know where to find the show. You guys know where to find us. But I want to get back to after the game. I thought of everything that happened last night. The most positive development from everything, start to finish of that game and then after that game, was LeBron pointing at himself for that missed for the corner three that he gave up.
Did he? I didn't see that from where I was sitting. That's good to know.
Yeah, he was. I have the quote. I wrote about it today for Silver Screen and Roll. And he said, basically, like, that's a cardinal sin. That's on me. I can't, like, I have to be mad at myself about that one. And
That's great to hear. I did that video for Silver Screen and Roll, right? And that was one of the things, was like, he's leaving, overhelping off of shooters in crunch time.
Yep.
And he did that. And again, I'm just like, and he was great for most of the game last night, right?
He was.
And so it was just, like, frustrating to see that, because that's not something that, you know, we talk a lot about how he's conserving himself, he's not accessing all of the gears he can get to and all that. That's something where it's actually easier to just stay on your guy when you're one pass away. Just stay there. Just stay there. Let Ingram, I think it was Ingram on Luka on that one.
Uh-huh.
And Ingram, every time he was matched up with Luka in that game, was great.
Yes.
He's become so good when he's defending wings. Ingram was good. He had that. And he had cut off Luka's angle to the basket, and LeBron dropped down, and then I think it was Barnes that hit that that corner three. And, like, LeBron doesn't need to do that, and it's not a matter of conserving effort or anything like that. It's just being more mentally engaged.
Absolutely. And like, the mistake itself happened, but I thought the way that LeBron responded to it was really important. And this, to me, is more leadership than, like, you don't want to be here when I lose patience. That stuff, that, like, radio people and TV people and casual fans are going to love the, like, macho, don't threaten me in this spot kind of thing.
And to be fair to LeBron, like, it was such a pointed question. And when I heard that quote, I was like, and all of us kind of did this, right? Yeah. Where we're like, oh God, here we go.
Yeah, absolutely. But this to me sends reverberations and has a ripple effect throughout the organization, even in this self-accountability of saying, I can't do that. I have to get better here. And like I wrote this for Silver Screen and Roll was that this is the place where you start to fix stuff. And we'll get into like the actual basketball aspects of this, but in admitting that he is also capable of committing a mistake, and in this case, a cardinal mistake, he's kind of setting the tone of like, okay, yeah, if we're going to fix this, we probably should start with individually and then come together collectively on that. And I really like that quote.
Very much so. It's accountability. And if LeBron is accountable to himself, everybody else has to be accountable, right? And it's something that we were talking the other day about how I think that Luke is not quite as important on this team. Mm-hmm. And this is one of those examples of that, because Luke is going to be preaching every game, every practice, every film session, do not help one pass away off of corner shooters.
Yeah.
It's up to the players to execute that. And when your best player makes a mistake on that, if he doesn't acknowledge it, that has an impact too.
Absolutely.
Even if it's unspoken, right? Mm-hmm. But when he does, he says, I messed up on this. That matters. However, it has to be followed up by action.
Absolutely.
So going forward, he needs to hold himself accountable in making the correct play there and making the right action. And then everybody else, when they make their mistakes, like the Lakers are making a lot of communication mistakes on their switches. Luke pointed that out in the postgame presser, like, we were awful on our switches tonight. That's a communication and an accountability thing. Mm-hmm. And so if LeBron maintains that mentality and puts action to it, that is going to start pouring over into other guys and other situations.
Absolutely. And that to me is leadership. Effective leadership.
Yes, it is.
So yeah, that was great to hear, and hopefully now we kind of take that next step of what you're talking about, acting upon it, right? Like my mom always used to tell me, it's not an apology if you don't do anything afterward. An apology is a promise to never do that again,
right?
and otherwise, it's just lip service. So yeah. It's about following up on that. We're going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, we'll talk about the starters. That kind of that last conversation kind of pushed the way the show's going to go down back about a segment, but we'll still catch up. The starters look good, and we're going to talk about that here in a bit. Today's show is brought to you in part by Mazuma. Mazuma USA has helped make my life a ton easier as a single party business owner, as a small business owner. I would be completely lost without the help that they've given me. I have access to CPAs, bookkeepers, accountants, all here in the U.S. and all within a call, email, text away, and they get back to me as soon as they possibly can, and it's always really quickly. They have packages set up based on what your business might need. They start at only $75 a month. They have everything that you might need if you're looking to manage your business and manage your business finances to let you get back to the passion of running your own small business. So give them a call at 213-947-6926 for a free consultation. Again, that's 213-947-6926. There are no strings attached to the conversation that you guys are going to have. They'll get you set up with whatever you might need. So call them again at 213-947-6926. Mazuma, your small business's one-stop shop for bookkeeping, taxes, and unlimited accounting advice. It's funny that the Lakers, whom we've heard talk endlessly, like nonstop, about how they want to really buy into small ball and playing small and getting out and running and all these things, they have the biggest starting lineup in the league.
Yeah, right.
But it looked good. It looked really good. It looked so good that that the bench, like the bench, is probably sitting there like, guys, we can tone it down a bit.
Oh well, the bench certainly toned it down a bit when they got into the game. Jesus,
yeah.
No, they looked really good. It's interesting construction of a lineup in that I've spoken about this before, and that Ingram is not your conventional two in terms of a guy that comes off of screens and knocks down a jumper. But the Lakers aren't doing stuff like that nearly as much. I've really liked LeBron in the high post and the low post, and I thought they used that effectively when he was with the starters. And, you know, and those are places where Kuzma can, you know, it gives him some space to cut. Same with Ingram. Ingram's done a better job of knocking down his spot ups. Lonzo's had a few spot ups as well. And then I thought I was really impressed with them defensively. I think that that's a group they switched 1 through 4 pretty consistently. And with that group, they were pretty good. They gave up some threes at the top of the key, specifically to Wesley Matthews. But a lot of that was pretty good coaching on Dallas's part to leverage JaVale staying in the paint and use that against them. So they did a lot of stuff where, like, DeAndre was setting a screen on Wesley Matthews' guy, freeing him up. And JaVale's not up high enough to help the guy on that. And usually that would – I forget who was defending Matthews at that point. I think it was Kuzma. But, yeah, that's something that they did a good job of taking advantage of that. But overall, I thought I was really happy with them on both ends of the floor.
Yeah, I talked to Kirk Henderson of Mavs Moneyball last night, and the one thing that really stuck out to him was that, like, even when JaVale isn't on the court, when you have guys like Lonzo, guys like Ingram, guys like LeBron, and Kuzma to a lesser extent, that's just a ton of arms.
And it is, man.
And I thought, especially when JaVale is out there, like, passing lanes were almost non-existent. Well, passing lanes that got to attacking positions on the court were non-existent, and driving lanes were non-existent. And that, to me, and this is where we'll get into some of the bench concerns as well, but that, to me, like, I really like that lineup has the length on the perimeter to make JaVale's job easy, and also has JaVale back there just in case the defense breaks down. That lineup makes a ton of sense together. Where,
yeah, go ahead. No, please.
Well, where I'm a little concerned is where that leaves the bench, though, because you have no anchor, and you have a bunch of guys who allow penetration, and that's a terrible combination on the defensive end.
Right. It's this kind of island of misfit toys. It's funny. This is something I've been thinking on for most of today, and I don't have quite the right answer to it yet, is I didn't like, and we discussed this the last time I was on, the 24 different lineups that they ran against Minnesota, right? Like those quick substitutions and all that. And that's something that, on one hand, he changed that last night against Dallas, where it was more of a defined, like, first unit, second unit. And now the way their rotation works, they're going to have a starter or two with the bench guys out there. But he went longer with the starting lineup and just with his units in general. It was more similar to what he's done in the last couple of years. But then it was really bad, right? Like those guys. And now part of that is going to be, this is a function of the first part of the season, is figuring out what works together and what doesn't. If that starting lineup was really good, and we'll note that that same lineup with Hart instead of Ingram was also very good. So I think they've at least got a really good six guys, like two versions of that that work well, which is really important at this stage. We're only 8 games in.
Yeah.
And so if you have something that, no, we need a bigger sample on both the good things and the bad things. I do have long-term concerns about that bench lineup, though. What did you see from them specifically, that bench group that made it look bad?
Well, it's the combination that I talked about a bit, but then it was also, like, on offense, you have a bunch of guys who I think they know what they're supposed to do out there together, but they aren't quite confident enough to go out and do those things out there together. Like Rajon Rondo is the only one out there who I think knows what he's supposed to do on offense and just goes out there and does it. But like KCP, Josh Hart, are we supposed to operate only off of off-ball screens and handoffs and those things, 1-2 dribbles kind of things? Lance Stevenson out there, and if he either doesn't dribble between his legs or palm the ball at some point in a possession, he considers that a wasted possession. And then, like, the big in those lineups, like, it looks like a group that was thrown together because the starters needed to be together. And I think it'll get better as soon as they get an even decent big, and I think as soon as KCP is eliminated from the rotation, I think.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, well, because that means that there's a starter with that group more often Like, the more minutes that KCP gets, that means the fewer minutes potentially that one of those six guys that we talked about will get. And I think by just that math alone, that'll make that rotation look a little bit better. And this kind of gets to the question I was going to ask you is, when it comes to building a rotation, is it easier for you as when you were coaching or in your analysis to look at it from a standpoint of, like, build from the inside out? Or have a really big rotation and then trim it down as you go along? Like, which way do you think a rotation should be built?
Right. So start with six guys and then add to that versus start with 10 or 11 and then subtract from that. Is that basically your question? I think it's the former, where you start with fewer guys and try and build it out. The problem I think that Luke has, so we like that six, right? Yeah. I think we're on the same page on that, those six guys, I think, and that's really important to be at that point this early on. The problem, I think Rondo and Lance together are awkward, even if, like, like Lance has played really well. Like, I've got no, behind the back alley-oop attempts aside, and he's going to do something every once in a while that, like, it's, but it's the whole JaVale McGee thing, right? Where JaVale would make, like, one dumb play in the past and then, like, five good plays, but nobody would remember the five good plays because he ended up on Shaqton for the one dumb one.
Right.
Lance has been good, right? Even that's just one possession where he screws up, right?
I like how you're talking yourself through that. Like, he's going to be fine. It's going to be okay.
No, I just want to be clear because I've been very critical of Lance, and it deserves to be acknowledged that he's been very good.
Absolutely.
I don't know if Rondo and Lance can work together. Like, my second unit, ideally, again, would be not an entire second unit where all five guys are subs. I think Rondo works best around guys who can finish around him. And so it would be something along the lines of Rondo, Hart, KCP, Kuzma, and then probably Jonathan Williams at that point, or JaVale, right? Like, whoever your five is, Wagner, he's coming, you know, he was active for last game. Because KCP, in theory, Hart and Kuzma are all, like, off-ball scorers types, and Rondo has always been effective as a, I'm the conductor conducting the symphony type of guy. You do this, you do that, we're going to get a bucket. Where, like, him and Lance are both ball-dominant type of guys.
Yeah.
And they've tried putting LeBron out there with that group, and it didn't work particularly well because LeBron's also a ball-dominant guy, right?
Right.
And LeBron ended up playing 40 minutes, which is not sustainable over the course of the season. So I think they're going to have to make a difficult choice between Rondo and Lance, even if, and Lance is playing better than Rondo is right now.
Yes, he is.
So what that will be over the course of a season, I don't know, but I think that is kind of where the pressure point is. But I do think you build out from those six rather than trimming down. What about you?
I would keep it simple. You figure out which guys you trust. You get those guys on the court as much as you possibly can. And then as those guys build comfort and confidence with that group, you can add to it on the peripherals. I just think that just makes the most sense.
Wow.
We're going to take a quick second here, and when we come back, we have to talk about the late-game struggles. It's been a thing now, and I kind of have a theory that isn't exactly groundbreaking, but it's something that I think I've really noticed, especially in Wednesday's game against Dallas. So we'll get to that here in a second. The foundation of this theory is pretty simple. The Lakers suck in the half court, and late in games, it becomes a half court game. And like in last night's or in Wednesday's game, they were going at Dallas in waves and transition. It was a lot of fun to watch. Poor Dallas, like any time they got a stop, you actually saw it on a couple guys' faces, like DeAndre Jordan in particular. When the Lakers got a stop, he was just like, well, I'll just stand down here.
Right.
You know? But I thought, as that game went along and as they got into clutch situations, when they were getting the ball on stops and they were they had the opportunity to run, on a couple occasions, I saw that whoever got the rebound would normally get the ball and push it really quickly. But in last night's game, they got the ball and they stopped, and they let the defense kind of get set up, and they tried to just use time. And I don't think – what I'm not calling for right now is that they play at that breakneck speed all the way throughout the game, all 48 minutes. Eventually, you're going to have to learn to execute in the half court. Mm-hmm. But as they learn to execute in the half court, I do think that we shouldn't see such a stark difference in pace over the first 43 minutes versus the last five or so.
I've always wondered this about NBA basketball is why do teams go completely away from their offense in the last like 3 to 5 minutes of a close game? I wish I knew the answer. I still don't. I understand it in like shot clock management situations, right? Where we want to get the last shot or we want to ensure we get a 2-for-1, but they do, it becomes that type of game way before. So not understanding why that is, and I can't give you a good answer to your question on, you know, why can't
there is no good answer.
That's just how it's always been. I think that eventually a team will be able to execute, and this is something Golden State's really good at, is they'll run their plays down the stretch of games and they'll actually run their offense. But for whatever reason, that's not the majority of the NBA. Two things. I think the Lakers try to attack switches in isolation too often.
Yes.
I think we see that in the number of, not necessarily down the stretch of close games, but like JaVale getting all the post-ups and ISOs that he's gotten. We saw that in crunch time with Ingram trying to attack Barea or other switches. I think they are, I think they're too dependent on that. The other element of it, which I thought was interesting, is LeBron pretty much gave the ball to Brandon and said, let's see what you can do.
Yeah.
Down the stretch of that game. Mm-hmm. Right. And, I think LeBron's still figuring out who's who and who can do what. Yep. And I think Luke even mentioned it after the game. He said, we called that. We wanted to see, we know what LeBron can do done. And which is a rather confident perspective from a 2-5 team that.
Yeah. If I was Dallas, I'd be, what the hell,
Dallas,
guys?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It was this close to losing to Dallas. Right.
And yeah.
Yeah. No, that was. So I think they are figuring out how the different pieces fit together. I would like to see LeBron in high post situations a little bit more. Yeah. They've been giving him the ball like he's Kobe, and like here's the ball up top, you know, go, and LeBron's always done that, right?
Yeah.
I think that if you give him a live dribble about 15 feet out, he's going to get a good shot for himself, either at the basket or as a jumper, or he's going to attract so much defense that someone's going to get an open spot up.
Yeah, I completely agree with all of that. And like the way I kind of put it last night after the game was like LeBron basically told the kids, in this case Ingram, all right, you go do your thing. And then it was almost like Ingram was looking back at LeBron like, are you sure? Like, are we positive? This is the right call?
There were a couple of possessions. I don't know if it showed up on TV, but where the ball got inbounded to Lonzo and Lonzo like looked at LeBron like very much body language. I'm going to pass you the ball now. And LeBron just like turned to his shoulder, you know, turned and like dribbled, like went up court. And Lonzo was like, okay.
All right, so, here we go then. Like,
and then, it, you know, ended up moving it to Ingram. So, I think that's a conscious decision by LeBron. And, you know, we saw in the very last play where he was like, all right, I'm going to, you know, that was like the hardest I've seen him go the whole season, was like, all right, score's tied.
Go away.
Yes. Yeah. Let me ask you this, Anthony, what defensive struggles? We're just talking about the offensive end.
Yeah.
Where are they struggling on that end? Well, down the stretch of games specifically.
For one thing, I don't think the Lakers' defense is such, because it requires so much communication. I don't think they're going to be very good at defending on the go or on the run, you know, responding to a team coming back at them after a stop. So sure. I think some of their offensive struggles put them in some kind of awkward defensive situations.
Great point.
But in general, too, though, I don't think the Lakers are very good at recognizing where they're at a weakness. Like, I think they overcompensate on offense in the way that you talked about, where they go too hard at what they perceive as a weakness.
Right, attacking those switches, yeah.
Yeah, whereas, like, when they get put into a switch or anything like that, I don't think they handle those situations very well because they're so focused on offense. It kind of makes sense, really, when you think about it, that, like, they're so focused on offense on finding those switches and then really going at them that on defense they don't want to be hit in the same way. And I think they kind of overreact to those kinds of switch situations.
100%. So, like, the overhelping that I talk about with LeBron, it's not exclusive to LeBron.
Yeah.
There are other guys doing that. If you take, like, freeze frames of, like, live plays, you'll see a lot of plays where all five Lakers have a foot in the paint.
Yeah.
And in 2018 NBA, that's an open three. That's with guys who make that shot. Like, especially when they're locked in down the stretch of a close game. So that's something that's better than underhelping. If you watched any, like, Cleveland last year when they were really bad, it was like, you got beat. That sucks for you, dude. Like,
have you seen them this year?
I've watched them a little bit. It's a damn miracle that, like, that LeBron got that team to the finals. I don't care how bad the East is. So
it's been incredible this year where, like, a guy will take a single dribble, one dribble, and it doesn't even have to be at the basket. A guy will take one dribble and, like, the other four guys on the court will just go, well,
yeah,
whoops.
Good luck to you. So it's better to have the opposite problem, right? Where all five guys, you, like, there's one of the old coaching idioms about defense is you never want three on the ball, right? You don't want a triple team guys. We talk about that with Shaq and Olajuwon and those old school guys, but that's you put yourself at way too much of a deficit if you're doing that. And you don't want to help one pass away, which the Lakers do a lot. A lot of times they make the wrong rotation where they go to, like, two guys go to one and, you know, leaving another guy open. I've spoken to that before. All of those are familiarity and fixable type of things. As irritating as that game was down the stretch, if I were to describe it in a very simple manner, they played really well for 42 minutes and then they thought they had it in the bag.
Yeah.
And their body language in person was so different over the last 5-6 minutes of that game where they just thought they had it. And then Luke said this after the game, like, when you disrespect the basketball gods, you know, like,
they're going to get you back.
Just going to disrespect you.
Yeah.
And to me, like, in a very simple way, like, rather than being like, it's a bunch of scheme stuff or personnel, like, guys weren't locked in the last 5 minutes and it showed.
It's really hard to re-ramp up your energy once you've kind of let it down.
Especially when you've given the other team energy and they're on a run, they're, like, all hyped up, right? Like, and you got to try and access that. It's tough.
It was almost like, to use a boxing analogy, you know how sometimes, you know, guys will kind of showboat, they'll stick their face in whatever, but that guy who sticks their face in there gets crocked, right? Like, they get hit, and then after that they have to like regain themselves, and it takes a lot. They just got hit in the face, so, like, it takes a lot to get caught back up to that kind of moment, and that's how it felt watching it with the Lakers there. I think there's some tactical things, as you mentioned, that they need to clear up. But in general, I think a lot of it comes down to familiarity. Like, a ton of it in their late game stuff especially is just like the stuff we talked about earlier when it comes to LeBron, you know, kind of telling the kids, no, you do you. And the kids are like, are you positive? And that's going to take some time in finding that balance. So that stuff I'm not too particularly concerned about. The last thing that we were going to talk about this earlier, the last thing that I absolutely needed to get to today is about Josh Hart, because in order for him to be that sixth guy, I think he needs to approach defense differently than the way he has so far this year, especially if he's going to play the bulk of his minutes with that second group that doesn't have an anchor defensively. He can't be allowing so much direct penetration to the basket. And I messaged you earlier this morning about, you know, kind of my theory on what's going on with him defensively. And this is something, like, he's been really good everywhere else, mind you. Like, you know, just like we talked about with Lance earlier, like, this is just one aspect. It's a really important aspect, but it's just one aspect. And, like, the question I asked you, or the theory that I presented to you, was basically that he attacks offensive players on the perimeter in the same way that he tries to do it on the interior.
Yes, yes, he does.
And so I'll let you kind of expand on that and ask you, do you think it's a fixable thing that he can get to this year?
I do think that it's a fixable thing, and I do think that over the course of this season, I don't think it's a light switch type of thing, but I do think that he can get better if the attention to detail is being paid, which honestly is a concern that I have about this coaching staff.
Yeah.
So to your point about him approaching it similarly is Josh likes to be physical, and when he's down in the post, he's gonna belly up and stone. You know that great David West tweet about like this MF stoned me twice, and then I'm gonna stone me twice. And I gotta retire, right? And Josh was very proud of that and said, "You're not the first, and won't be the last." Basically, right?
Yeah.
When you do that on the perimeter, and a guy has a live dribble, you're going to be get beat pretty much every time in today's NBA. Absolutely. You had a great point when we were talking privately about Josh Hart would have been a great perimeter defender in the era of hand checking, right? When you could be physical and but in the freedom of movement NBA where you have to move your feet, you cannot belly up to guys like that with a live dribble and not expect to be beat. Another thing, Mike Garcia at Canyon Driver on Twitter, who's a very good follow, very keen basketball mind and huge Laker fan. He pointed out, Josh will peek to see when the screen is coming for pick and roll, and he'll like turn his head just for a brief moment. Guys will attack him on that and beat him with straight line drives almost every time. That's something that's partially a peripheral vision issue, and that he'll get better at that over the course of, you know, getting more experience and whatnot. But all of that those are things that can be addressed. He has the talent to be a good defender. He skips a little bit and he like pump fakes get him off of his feet. That's a technique issue.
Yeah.
Like there are, so Josh Hart can be a good perimeter defender and his mistakes are correctable, but there are a lot of them. He makes a lot of correctable mistakes. So can he do five different things differently in perimeter defense? I think he can, but I think it's going to take time.
I think so too. And again, it comes back to, this is how important, especially with how KCP has played this year. They need Josh Hart to bleed to be able to be one decent defender on that bench, because Rajon Rondo is not a decent defender at this point. Lance Stephenson has been better than we thought he was going to be on that in that respect, but I don't know if I want to rely on that. I think eventually we might see some regression to the mean at some point with him. That bench unit needs one solid defender, and then maybe you pair that solid defender with one of the starters. Maybe it's Ingram or Lonzo, whatever. And that bench starts to make a little bit more sense in terms of at least mitigating some of the concern of not having an anchor with some perimeter stalwart defenders. And that's why it's so crucial that Hart figures this stuff out.
Yeah, I think that even in a broader sense beyond just the perimeter defense, I think Hart's probably the young guy that's the most impacted by who he's sharing the court with.
Mm-hmm.
He's really good in that open type of style and where there's a lot of ball movement.
Yeah.
And we even saw this during the preseason where when him and Lance played together, he kind of disappeared.
Yeah.
I think that with those guys like so Josh is going to fit really well with Alonzo, with Kuzma, with even a KCP type of guy. I think they fit because that's where ball movement is going to happen more than having a guy who's got the ball in his hands a little bit more. So, you know, if you can get him on the court with Lonzo and with guys like that, I think he's probably the most impacted of all of the guys in terms of like how well he fits in both on the offensive and defensive ends.
Yeah, there is no reason whatsoever that he shouldn't be the team's sixth man. Like there is none whatsoever, because you could swap him out for anybody in that starting group, and that unit makes sense. If anything, like we haven't talked much about LeBron not playing the five very often, but if the Lakers want to go to it earlier and they swap out Hart for JaVale, maybe get him a short breather elsewhere on the court, like that kind of, that's when I think you're better off using that lineup than hoping you can use it or close with it down the stretch of games, because that lineup needs to get out and run. That lineup hasn't shown a very much ability in being able to execute in the half court.
Yeah, I think it's going to depend on who the big is for the other team.
Yeah.
You know, if I think that's something you can do. Like, can you do that against DeAndre Jordan, for example, who they played last night?
Well, based on how he played last night, yes.
sure. But when it's Jokic and Kat and even a Nurkic type of guy, right? Yeah. Like, just big bangers. There are more of them than I anticipated, right? Yeah. Especially in this early part of the schedule. Now, so, for example, Toronto's coming into town in a couple of days, and they aren't starting Valanciunas anymore. They're starting Serge Ibaka there. Can you do that then? Yeah. I think that if that's who the five is on the court, I think, but that's the type of thing that is going to be more determined by who the fives are. Can you sub Hart in immediately for JaVale?
Yeah.
You know, I think that's going to be what determines it.
Yeah. The larger point I was making is that, like, Hart needs to get out there with those starters more often because that's when he's going to look the best. All right, we were going to talk about Lonzo really quick. The big major point that I was going to make there was that he swallowed up Dennis Smith Jr. Poor dude looked completely hapless and hopeless for the entire game.
This is what I was talking about, man, when I was all pissed off at him for how he played on the road trip. Like, he only took 6 shots in that game, and he shot well, right? Yeah. But that was not his most important contribution to that game.
Yeah.
He completely took Dennis Smith out of that game. And Brandon did a great job on Luka when he was there. We didn't get to this in the late game struggles, but one of the things I didn't like was Brandon on JJ Barea at the end of the game. Like, his legs are taller than Barea is. How is he supposed to, like...
Did you see the one play? He picked up a foul on it, but did you see the one play where Barea was getting a topside pick and roll, or a pick and roll at the very top of the court, and Ingram was so low that it just looked comical. That's not who you're going to want to guard Barea with,
for sure. And Ingram's been great on defense this year. I've been so happy with him on the wings and whatnot. Yeah. It's like, it's totally a coaching thing at that point. Like, if Barea's the guy that's killing you, then that's Lonzo's guy. Yeah. Like, Lonzo is the guy that is equipped. If KCP were playing better, he'd be a potential option there. But to me, like, if you need to defend a guard, if a guard is giving you issues, Lonzo's the guy that you want to put. And Lonzo needs to get better at, like, fighting over the top of screens and pick and rolls. And maybe that's why the Lakers didn't want to do that. But I still think at the end of the day, because then that frees up, like, Luka got hot down the stretch. None of those were possessions were on Ingram.
Yeah.
Not a single one of them. Yep. The only one where he was productive was the one where LeBron overhelped on that.
Yep.
But Luka did all of his damage against KCP, against smaller guys. Mm-hmm. So, like, to me, if you got Lonzo defending the guy on the ball and then Ingram defending the best wing, that, like, that's going to be your best defensive lineup. Sorry, I got off track there. I just want to get that on.
You're 100% correct. That'll do it, though, for this episode of the Locked On Lakers podcast. Sending you guys into the weekend, fortunately, with a win. Thank God they got that way. This would have been a very different show had the Lakers given that game away.
Yeah, man.
I'd have been hungover, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Let's not go there, man. There's been enough, like, to irritate in the first part of the year. Yeah. And it's the first part of the year. Like, we always knew it was going to be like this. It's just living through it is like,
Yeah.
But they won the game. They badly outplayed Dallas when they actually played hard. If you want to talk about them not playing hard, I totally understand for the last 5 minutes. But I've felt they've looked significantly better than the two bad teams that they've played so far this year.
Oh, yeah.
And you need those type of wins over the course of an NBA season.
Absolutely. Yeah, the next step is just finishing the job against better teams. And you know, I think they can.
Yeah, they'll be all right.
All right, but have a great rest of your weekend, and we'll come back at it. Make sure you guys are getting your questions in for Monday's mailbag episode. 5-star iTunes review. Get your question read on the show, guaranteed. Have a great rest of your weekend, and we'll talk to you then.